This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello.
Hello.
The first Amazon Fresh store outside of London is opening today in the county, allowing shoppers to scan to get in. What does that mean, scan to get in?
You have to scan to get in.
In the shop?
You have to have the Amazon app on your phone.
Right.
And to get into the shop, you have to scan the app. If you carry on reading it, you'll find out why.
Okay. Shop and then just walk out.
Yeah. So you don't pay anything.
Oh, this sounds lovely. I do like to shop local, as you know, yeah. But let's read it. Situated in the Blythe Meadow shopping centre in Sevenoaks, the store will sell its own branded food goods and groceries. Customers will need the Amazon app on their smartphone to enter the store, but then can put their phone away as the store uses what the online giant terms just walk out technology to automatically detect when products are taken from or returned to the shelves. This is gobsmacking, but it's all tracking, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's tracking. I find it a bit spooky.
It's like if you remember when you're in those hotels.
Yeah.
Where the room minibar
registers
when you take a bottle out.
Yeah.
The trouble is, you take a bottle out to look what's behind it and put it back, and it doesn't register you putting it back.
No.
Or, you know, and you get people that will take the bottles out of whiskey and then fill them up with water.
But this is in a shopping centre, so I guess in shopping centres, not many independent shops can afford the rent and the rates.
Sure,
so maybe that's the place for them. I hope it doesn't come into the high street.
It's an interesting concept. It will be interesting to see what the uptake on it is. I'm sure a lot of us will attempt to use it if we can at some point, just for the novelty factor of seeing how it works, kind of thing. I don't know whether I want to do my shopping like that every week, though.
No, I squeak if I have to do a self-checkout thing.
Yeah.
Oh, baggage in the wrong area. Yeah. And, you know.
Unexpected item in the bagging area.
And that's just me.
Yeah.
I like a small shop. So I like my lovely grocer in Whitstable High Street, Staines Farm Shop. During lockdown, as you know, they were delivering to my mum, who is 91, and to us. Mm. And I said, to save time, dump it all at my mum's order, dump it all at our house, and I'll drive it round.
Mm.
And Dave, who's the owner of Staines Farm Shop in Whitstable High Street, said, oh, no, because Ben, the driver, likes to see how Ruth is.
Mm.
And I just thought that was lovely, because they were absolutely flat out. But we're lucky. We've got butchers, bakers, and little, you know, card shops and things. And I'm sure this brings us nicely on to Tenterton, doesn't it, with our next guest?
It certainly does,
A lovely high street.
It is, yeah. Just talking about it, though, last Sunday, I went into Tesco's in Tenterton.
Which is not your local shop.
No, I shop in Dell's Place, shop around the clock at St Michael's quite often.
Is that the, ironmonger?
No, that's Webbs.
Webbs, so that's where you can go and ask for your four candles and things.
You get four candles in Webbs with no problem at all.
And if you ask for anything...
I have never been into Webbs in Tenterton and asked for something and they said, we haven't got that. Never. And I went through a little thing of trying to think of obscure things to buy in there.
Just to annoy them.
But basically they shuffle off upstairs somewhere and find something that was packed in 1903 and bring it down in a little piece of royal wrap paper and go, do you mean these? And you go, yeah, that's them. And they went, 3p, thank you. No, Dell's just a corner shop. In St Michael's, just down the road from me, and I quite often buy bits in there. But I went into Tesco's on Sunday, and I went fairly early, just after they'd opened, because I only needed a couple of bits, but I had to get them in Tesco's, the cleaning bits or whatever.
Yeah.
And I went in there, and it was chaos. They've started this self-scanning thing.
Oh.
And the problem with that is the self-scanners are also the express checkouts. So you've got all these people with baskets going through there. And, of course, Tesco's don't trust their customers as much as Waitrose for some reason. So they were inspecting every five things from each basket. It was chaos. It was utter chaos. And all of us wanting to get out just on the express checkouts were having to queue at the end of all these things.
Well, you want to see me try and check out my... I'm not taking luggage to Valencia, but see me try and check out...
You're not taking luggage on holiday.
Well, I'm only taking little hand luggage. cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've got a house there, but I haven't been there for 2 years. I can't remember what's there or anything. But all my potions, the thing is, when you get to my age, I've got so many potions and vitamins and things. So that will take up my little hand luggage, my little
wheelie.
You
need to watch that.
What, my potions?
No, many, many, many years ago, I was dispatched, when I had a proper job, I was dispatched to work in New York. And
best place for you, really.
Yeah, no, but like you, I was one of these I'll travel light types because I couldn't stand.
Oh, I remember this.
And I just had a Tesco carrier bag with some pants in it and some socks, and that was it. And I thought I'll buy everything else when I get there in the shopping mall. And when I arrived at border control at I think it was LaGuardia I flew into, but when I arrived there, they went, "How long are you here for?" "A month." And they went, "Have you got a visa?" Yeah, I've got a green card. And I went, "Okay, fine. You're here for a month. Where's your luggage?" It's in there. No, they didn't like that at all. They were right on the point of deporting
they
me.
They thought you were some sort of illegal immigrant. They do shout at you, I find, there. When I used to travel to New York, lovely. I love New Yorkers, and I love that. But at the airport, let's get in the line, move around the line. And I didn't find it very welcoming. The people are fabulous.
I lived in Manhattan for a while. And because New York is built on a grid system of roads.
Yeah, it's very easy to.
They get these massive traffic jams, and they've got what are called grid busters, which is a little thing that drives along the pavement, and it's got a crane, and it just hooks a car up on its side so that they can relieve the tension and get you through. And they use loudspeakers, and they come charging down the pavement. "Get off the pavement, get off the pavement."
They're very no nonsense, aren't they?
Yeah.
When I went out with Nurse Liz, who's one of our American listeners, she's in Pennsylvania, isn't she?
She is indeed.
Pennsylvania, 6'5".
That's him, yeah.
And she took me for rooftop cocktails, so it was lovely because she was a listener for years and years. And then when I flew over, she met me. And she was in Maryland. And we had this long, she was living in Maryland, we had this long chat as we had our cocktails, and she was going, saying, Marilyn. And I said, "She's absolutely potty on Marilyn Monroe. It's all she talks about," said to my new husband. And then I found out, Maryland, that's how she, Marilyn, they say. And I said, "Oh, Maryland," you know, like Dick Van Dyke. But lovely, lovely people.
She tweeted me on Sunday, you were going on about something, it was a distance from somewhere to somewhere else. It was from Tankerton. I think it was from...
She is fascinated by our geography.
Yeah. She said, "I don't understand the geography." That's right. I was saying, I live in Tankerton and Jules lives in Tankerton. She said, "Well, how far is that?" And I said...
As far away as possible.
Yeah. I said, "It's 30 miles, apparently." And she said, "Can't you do that in stone?" So I said, "No, but it is 240 furlongs, if you really want to know."
You have to be very careful with the language, because, you know, if you say hook up, that's naughty, apparently, hook up. Whereas I just say it to meet up with someone. But
yeah, but some of the things you've said on air, even for the English, were a bit near a knuckle.
Yeah, I know. And the Gotten, I can't really get my head around the Gotten. That gets my goat a bit.
Yeah.
Should we talk to Roy now?
I think we ought to, really.
Yeah, I think let's talk about Tenterden High Street and what's happening.
Well, no, we're going to talk. It's a pleasure to welcome on the show Roy Isworth. Roy is a medical professional, a consultant urologist, but you're also heavily, heavily involved in the local community in lots of different ways, are you not, Roy? And you're chair of the trustees of one of our local institutions, the Tenterden Social Hub. So why don't you kick off and tell us a bit about the Tenterden Social Hub and what it is and what it does?
Well, the Tenterden Social Hub was founded 42 and a half years ago. The old school, which in Church Road, which was built in 1843 and at that point was owned by Ashford Borough Council, became vacant. And a group of philanthropists, including my friend Dr. Raymond Crawford, got together and wanted to set up a day centre for the elderly.
Right.
And I think it was a sort of happy coincidence in that the building was available and the need was there and it came into being. And we celebrated our 40th anniversary just before the pandemic. We exist in mostly the old school building, but with a couple of rather leaky modern extensions tacked on the back, going down the hill behind the old school. And I think we do a great job with the facilities we've got. Of course, many of the day centres across Kent are purpose-built. Mm. Indeed, the one in Ashford is a very good example of that. It's a very large building with wonderful facilities.
I was involved for a little while with one in New Romney, which again was a purpose-built building, and it was a huge building, and they only used about a third of it because it was just so big. Yeah.
Yes, it's better to have too much.
Yeah, than not enough, obviously. Yeah.
So I think the team do a great job in what we've got available. In fact, during the pandemic, we branched out and in discussions with NHS Property Services, we acquired the use of what had been an old clinic in Recreation Ground Road.
The East Cross Clinic.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's now been reopened as EC30, and it's a flagship centre for social prescribing.
Right.
What does that mean? What is a flagship centre for social prescribing?
Well, flagship means that it's one of the most successful ones in England. And social prescribing is essentially, because I guess you haven't got several hours, is anything that is legal and beneficial for people.
Right.
So we have quite a lot of different functions operating from it. Mm. We have a cafe and a charity shop which give people a good reason to go in. Mm. And they can then find out all sorts of information on subjects which are maybe somewhat sensitive. So a number of charities operate from there. Food bank, the old school larder, which caters for families with children who normally get free school meals. Mm. Al-Anon, domestic violence, debt relief, etc.
Gosh, that's brilliant. One umbrella.
I was there a couple of weeks ago, actually. The Chamber of Commerce had some networking meetings there as well. Yeah,
really good.
Yeah.
And the cafe selling.
Well, the cafe is. As I say, it sells coffee and cakes and sandwiches. It's not in any way intended to compete with the other outlets in the town. Mm. It's simply a way of getting people to be able to go in there and meet together and seek advice, which is readily available throughout the building.
Mm. Absolutely important to have these hubs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where anybody can go in.
So the work of the Tenterson Social Hub is offering community services. Do you have a particular client group that you look after, or is it kind of anyone?
Well, we look after older people.
Mm-hmm. That's me and you, Jules.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
That's essentially, at the moment, 60 plus, but it will be downgraded to, if you want to use that word, to 55 plus.
Gosh.
And these are essentially people who come in for the day or part of the day. They get a meal. There are lots of activities that they can take part in. There are other services available in the hub, hairdressing, chiropody, chiropractor, assisted bathing, etc.
So do you actually have bathing facilities
yes.
in there?
Yes, we do.
Excellent. So is it a wet room or?
No, it's a bath with a hoist.
Excellent.
And obviously we have trained staff to run that. Mm.
So how was the money for all of that? Must have been quite expensive. Where did it come from?
Well, the majority of the money for that group comes from the charges we levy on the members.
Right.
In addition to that, we have always received direct grant funding until the beginning of this year from Kent County Council, as do the other Age UK centres in Kent. We probably did relatively badly in that I'm not sure what the historical basis for the allocation of these monies were, because we were probably looking after more people and doing more with less money than some other places, but anyway, it just used to arrive in two tranches a year. Mm. The County Council have contracted the work out to a company called Imago, and we have had to negotiate with them for the replacement grant funding that used to come directly from KCC. Essentially, we can't manage as an entirely self-funding organisation because the prices we would have to charge the members would be, beyond their capability to pay.
Yeah.
So a degree of grant funding has to happen to make it affordable.
Right.
And of course, this year, with all the cost pressures that we, alongside everyone else, have been subject to, we've had to pass those on to the members.
Right.
How have you found the mental health of the elderly in the area after what we've been through with lockdowns and things? Have you had to bring in any experts? Or
well, we do run a COGS club for people with dementia. They actually come in for 5 hours and they have lunch.
Right.
And the benefit of that is that their carers get effectively a large chunk of the day off, so that obviously they're looked after and fed and entertained and given stimulating things to do, and it does mean that the carer can have a break,
a respite. Yeah.
Yes. So that's a valuable thing. We are trying to recruit a dementia coordinator to recruit more people to come and use our facilities, and we have funding for that, but the salary is only $20,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
And for the sort of job involved, I think we're going to struggle to find somebody.
And finding staff anyway is really hard at the moment, very hard. It's interesting, I'm actually a director of AGK in Midway, and I'm also a trustee of 3 or 4 other charities, and a lot of us have struggled because we've had this massive uplift in demand due to the lockdowns and all the things that went with that, and people's nervousness around the whole pandemic issue, and then a hemorrhaging of income from all kinds of, you know, because a lot of the way that certainly the charities that I'm involved in raise money, we were stopped from doing it. So it's a very difficult situation that we all face at the moment. So I know you folks at the Tenterton Social Hub are desperately trying to raise money. You have a golf match this Friday.
Yes.
To raise funds that's taking place at Tenterton Golf Club. If you want to get involved in that, by the way, it's very cheap to get involved. You can have a 4-ball in it. You need to email Phil Alden, A-U-D-E-N, Phil Alden at btconnect.com, and he will send you a entry form. But it's this Friday, so you haven't got long to do it. And all of that money is going to Tenterton Social Hub. So, Roy, where do you go from here? What's the plan?
Well, I think that we are obviously looking for some assistance to get out of the problems that arose during the pandemic, because effectively two things happened. First of all, when the first lockdown came along, KCC produced a rescue package, a very generous one, which effectively stopped us from closing. That was not renewed. Fair enough, and the normal funding then resumed thereafter. The problem we've had, and we've just actually been looking at it as a board of trustees, is twofold. We haven't recovered our numbers from the pre-pandemic levels, and therefore our income is affected. So,
is that the member numbers?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, for example, because of our rural location, we have to run a fleet of transport to collect and return members to their homes, which is disabled, it's got disabled access. And it costs us the same to run the bus, whether it's got 6 people on it or 16.
Yeah.
But obviously our income would be commensurately a lot lower. So the numbers are gradually beginning to build up, but it's going to take a while to get back to that point. And the second major problem is that we had to pay an absolute fortune in overtime to our staff because of all the staff that were repeatedly either off sick with COVID or having to self-isolate because family members had it.
Yep.
And clearly, in an institution like that, we had to follow guidelines to
of
the
course.
Absolute letter to avoid the risk of infecting our members. And I think the final thing, as with all other charities, is that very little in the way of fundraising was able to take place, and we're looking, as with the golf day, to getting back to that, but we managed to do very little of it for the last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a very difficult time for charities. I'm a trustee and actually the chair of the trading arm of Kenwood Trust, which is a residential home for people with drink and drug addictions based in Yalding. And most of our fundraising was through events. We have a Georgian country house with big park like grounds, and we raised most of our money by staging events there. All of that came to a grinding halt. But of course, we had the biggest influx of clients that we've ever had due to people being locked away at home and turning to drink and drugs to alleviate some of the problems that they were facing. So it was a double whammy for us. So I get exactly where you're coming from, Roy. And I just want to come back to the point you were making, because I think it's an incredibly important point about it being a rural area. And there are so many people that are isolated in a rural area. And we have no public transport anymore. There is, you know, Tenterton has a railway station, but it's a steam railway and it only goes one place. We're not on a mainline railway station. The bus services anywhere are pretty, you know, there are major buses to Ashford, but that's it really. But most people live in rural areas, so to do anything to help them, we've got to have some transport infrastructure, and we just don't have that any longer. So any charity doing this kind of thing has to do that themselves. And of course, it's not just running a minibus. We've just seen, you know, diesel's gone up to £2.2p a litre, you know. It's so everything's piling one on top of the other that's killing all these things. I think I'm saying this, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you know, I think some of our politicians need to realize the work that charities do that alleviates things that they would have to do if those charities didn't exist, yeah, and be a bit more respectful of how much work is done on behalf of the community by charities that need money. Again, I'm the president of the Kent Deaf Children's Society, and we look after 1,800 deaf children in Kent on a budget of 15 grand a year. And that's not what we get from KCC. We only get 7 grand from KCC. If we didn't do that, KCC would have a duty to put those kids somewhere, which would cost a damn sight more than the 7 grand that they're giving us, you know. So whilst we recognise that money's tight right across the board, some things are valuable.
I think it's interesting that the Department of Health is now the Department of Health and Social Care.
Mm.
And I've had to do quite a lot of negotiating this year. Mm. And we had to negotiate with the landlord of EC30, which is NHS Property Services. Mm. And I had to explain to them that at the time, the trustees could not sign a long lease because the financial pressures subject that TSH itself was subject to.
Mm.
I pointed out that one of the things we do at Social Hub is facilitate people coming home from hospital because we provide them with home meals and home help.
Mm.
Not nursing, but home help.
Yeah.
And this means that the difference between someone who's well enough to leave hospital but can't look after themselves, who can be looked after by us.
Mm.
So they're freeing up a hospital bed.
Indeed. I was asked if I knew the costs comparatively, which, funnily enough, I do. So if you're in an acute hospital bed, roughly speaking, it costs about £450 a day.
Mm.
If you were in Westview Hospital, half of which is closed at the moment, it would cost about £190 a day because you don't have the same level of trained staff.
Mm.
If you had everything that we have to offer in a day, which you wouldn't have every day, the Social Hub, it would cost about £65 a day.
Right.
Some calculating was going on in the background at the headquarters of NHS Property Services, and they computed that the number of days, bed days, that we save the trust a year is equivalent to £2.79 million. I said I'd accept a cheque for a 20th of that by return of post, but right. I'm still waiting.
Fine. Yeah. I've been heavily involved in that. My poor old mum's 93. She was in hospital a couple of months ago over a long period of time. She was sent home from hospital. Was 93-year-old. She lives on her own. And there's no support. And, you know, within a week, she was back in hospital because she couldn't look after herself. You know, she wasn't capable of doing it. She had to go back to hospital. So I get that. You know, it's a question of prioritising what you do and looking at the value, again, of what's provided in the community. Interesting stuff. So we wish you every success with the work that you're doing. It is so important what you do for the community. And I just want to say to everybody out there listening, please just send them some money. That's all you need to do. It's Tenterton Social Hub. The website is listed on the Kent Business Radio website, so you can find it there. There's a golf charity day this Friday. I'm sure there will be other fundraising events taking place, and we'll let you know what they are. But please, if you've got any spare pennies, do think about donating to this wonderful charity, because they do a fantastic job in the community. For the moment, Roy Isworth, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and we wish you continued success with the Tenterton Social Hub.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Jump in there. Can one donate via the website, or is there any particular channel?
You can do that. Alternatively, if you want to donate, the person to get in touch with is the Chief Executive Officer, Lindsay Franklin, and right. Her email address is all lowercase, lindsay.franklin@tsh.org.uk.
And as Lindsay's details on the website?
They are, yeah.
Yep. Fantastic, yep. Thank you.
The website link's on the radio site. Perfect. As Roy says, you can then get in touch with them through their contact details and donate any money. Roy, thank you so much for that. A pleasure. We've not got long left, but do stay as part of the show.
I was just going to say that it is so essential to have the support when you leave hospital. We know when my elderly dad was in K&C, it was incredibly stressful because I wanted him to go to a hospice. He was 88 and he was on his last legs. Mm. And the consultant wouldn't release him to the hospice because my dad's wishes were to go home. There was no way my mum could have coped. She's now 91. At the time, she was about 86. So it required two nurses to lift him. He'd had a stroke. He'd had a heart attack and stuff. And so I was battling to get him into the local hospice. And she just wouldn't release him. So it was very, very difficult.
It is.
And it's so emotional, you know.
Having experienced it as well, I wouldn't have known until I experienced this with my old mum, bless her heart. It's something that as a society we need to look at and think about. Yeah,
care for the elderly.
Yeah, yeah, but especially those that are released from hospital. My mum had been in hospital. She'd at the end of her term in hospital, she'd been sent to Hawkhurst, which is a community rehabilitation hospital. Lovely.
Yeah, they're brilliant.
Really nice.
Cottage hospitals.
As it turned out, the day she was supposed to come home, she was actually sent back to Pembury because she had another problem occurred. But when she was finally sent home, that's when everything started to go wrong. She was provided with a home care package, but that package was, I don't want to start knocking everybody, but it was nonsense. Basically, what you got is someone came in and their entire role was to help her get up or go to bed. But the problem was sometimes they wouldn't get in because she couldn't get herself in and out of bed at first. Sometimes they'd arrive at 11 o'clock to get her up and 5 o'clock in the evening to put her to bed.
Well, that's just, because they have such a huge workload.
They had a massive workload and they got loads of... And then, again, it's this rural area, you know...
takes 20 minutes to get from A to B.
Kate, who was the lovely woman that was looking after my mum, she... she would say, you know, she had a client in Hawkhurst, a client in Ashford, a client in, my mum lives in Headcorn, yeah, she was driving longer than she was looking after patients because we live in a rural area.
Do you know if they still, Roy, have to pay for their own petrol, a lot of these? I heard somewhere that they did have to, some of them.
All depends who they work for.
I think that's true. I think it does depend who they work for. I mean, our Helping Hands service, who are people that go out to people's homes, we obviously pay their travelling expenses, but they do have to provide their own transport. But the advantage, I think, of our service is that you pretty well always get the same person, not who happens to be rostered that day.
Well, that's brilliant.
And so this is very good for older people because it means that they know where you like the shopping put, they know where you like things, you know, tidied away, etc., etc. So that's, I think, a valuable service. If I could just very briefly mention, I didn't get a chance to say that we also run an, a disability hub in our downstairs department, which looks after adults over 18 with physical and mental disability.
Right, okay.
And again, there's nowhere else locally that such people could possibly access this service.
Right.
So if we weren't there, they would just stay at home.
Yeah. And we're all going to get old soon.
Some of us are already old.
Yeah. I know you want to get onto other things. You're champing at the bit. But I would say that we need to think much more about dying and end of life care. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, it's not handled particularly well because you're so stressed at the time.
Well, a funny story about my mum now with her carer, Kate. I got a phone call one evening from Kate saying, we've got a problem. I've just come to help your mum get into bed and she's fallen and I'm not able to pick her up. And I said, okay, why? She said, well, I'm not allowed to manhandle the patients. Okay. So I said, what are you going to do? And she said, oh, I've sorted it. I'm just telling you what I've done. And I said, okay, what do you do? She said, I called the fire brigade. And I went to see my mum the next day and she went, I think I'm going to fall over again tonight. They sent three firemen that put her to bed. And while they were there, one of the firemen said, I installed these smoke detectors in this house. While I'm here, I'll just service them. So he serviced the smoke detectors as well. But my mum was going, oh, I feel all giddy.
I love a fireman.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a lovely story.
Fantastic. Thank you, Roy. Okay, we've got lots to catch up on. I've got a tweet from Competitive Business Services that says, Vanilla Web, that's me. Business Bunker, that's us. Please give me a shout out. B2B services broker with very competitive rates on utilities and business services. No trinkets, no baubles, no gimmicks. Just great value for money services with over 30 suppliers. You can, this is Stephen. Best UK broker is his Twitter handle.
Forest Health and Safety, part of the Forest Group, is a full range provider of people management and business support. It's a service for SMEs and they'll now be able to provide its clients with real-time remote visual support, allowing its clients to deliver long-term efficiency, costs and safety gains. And the company is now providing cutting-edge technology powered by SiteCall, enabling its clients to collaborate hundreds of miles apart, whether that be video conferencing, working on central documents, or attending site inspections together. So they say travel accounts for 34% of all carbon emissions. Digital remote inspection is in demand globally and is projected to reach £23.9 billion by 2025. And Forest Health and Safety is one of the first H&S companies to provide remote inspection services. So that's health and safety companies. I was going to say, did you see my tweet hanging out my window in sunny Whitstable yesterday? So I was doing some work in my front window facing the sea and looking at the view. It was all nice and peaceful, which isn't often it's nice and peaceful. And there was some clown came to have his lunch and sat in his car instead of waddling out to the bench with his sandwich, kept all the windows closed and kept his engine idling for nearly an hour.
Oh, no.
And the fumes of the diesel were coming in my front house.
Well, imagine what they were like in the car.
I know. And normally I sort of seethe and then, but I went out and tapped on his window and I thought, I'm either going to get stabbed or... So I tapped on his window very sweetly and I said, hello, would you mind turning off your engine, please? I said, because it's giving me a sore throat. And it does actually give me a sore throat. He said, I said, it is illegal if you look at the, what's it called? You know, the driving thingy, Bob, what's it called?
Highway code.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And it's section so-and-so. I should learn the section.
You should know this, being a bossy.
I know, but just because the amount of people at Engine Line...
She's a bosomy woman. Excuse me?
Yeah.
Do you know section 4 of the highway code? Yeah. Well, let me read
I
it to you.
I think it's section 5, but if you Google engine idling RAC, it actually does more harm than... driving.
Yeah, yeah.
And outside the school, local school, the mums all sit while the children are queuing up with their engine. There's a great big notice saying, please turn off your engine. Anyway, he didn't stab me. He wound up his window rather huffily. And then half an hour later, had some peace. He moved off, and then a black van came with two guys eating fish and chips, and they had their engine right. I thought, I
don't know what it is with all this thing. I suppose in the winter when it's cold,
beautiful day.
Yeah, no, I'm not making excuses.
Just waddle to the bench.
I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't have that in my car because my car's got this stop-start technology, the car switches off on its own, even when you're at traffic lights.
You need to get me back on eco because my car, I went in for a service and it stopped doing that. I need to get it back on eco. You're good at all that.
Jules, it sounds like you need us to print you a sign of no idea.
This is what my new husband said. He said, you know, because we work there and it's so lovely and you hear the sea and you hear the birds and then you get some clown. So we were saying we could have a banner because we're top floor, so we could just roll it out. Section 51
you.
Of the highway.
What you need is a foghorn out the window. Go, you, in the blue Ford, turn your engine off. Section 4 of the highway code.
Even if it's cold, I just couldn't do it.
I'm surprised in today's world as well, the cost of fuel that they're laying their engines.
Exactly, they're just showing off, aren't they?
Yeah. I'll have a banner. Mates Rates.
Of course.
Put your logo on it.
Thank you.
We're going to need to get Webbs to sponsor Tenterton Social Hub because we've given them lots of publicity.
And you've got the other guy, the Greek chap, who does kebabs and things.
Mustafa.
Yeah.
Mustafa Denise.
Must have a kebab.
Mustafa Denise.
Can't he sponsor them as well?
Oh, I don't know, Sarah Marsh Collins is going, I use Webb's Tenterton loads when I lived in St Michael. So did the rest of the Southcott family.
Do you think she's a little bit homesick?
Yeah, it's fabulous. She lives in Devon now. Yeah. It's a fabulous shop and ever so helpful. It's very true, Sarah. It is. It's a lovely shop. Yeah. What were you waffling about?
I don't know. I can't remember. I've read out a few tweets, and I think I've done my share, really.
Have you done everything?
This is rather interesting. This is about Kenwood Trust. So a mum who lost her son tragically makes an impact in schools across Kent with the Kenwood Trust. So this is Kim Webster, who very sadly lost her son 4 years ago. Canterbury College student, William Hawley, he was just 17 and he took the painkiller Tramadol and he fell unconscious and he was rushed to hospital where tragically he could not be revived. So we're really sorry to hear about this, Kim. And Kenwood Trust, Kent's leading alcohol and drug rehabilitation centre, is thrilled to welcome Kim to officially represent the youth teams in schools across the county. It's in a bid to warn others of the danger and paint a picture of how difficult her life has been since his death 4 years ago. And Kim is on a mission to help educate, inform and ultimately save young lives. So since the tragedy, Kim has spoken to over 17,000 teenagers about what actually happens when someone you love dies and the decisions a parent has to make as a consequence. And Kim says it's a privilege to join the team at Kenwood Trust and continue to help make a difference. And it's become a passion of mine to educate our young people since losing Will. He was a typical teenager. He was naive, curious and undereducated in the dangers of drug use, just like many of our children. If I can help save lives by sharing the journey and helping them to learn from Will's mistake, then it's something I'll continue to do in his memory. So that's lovely. There is a website, but I suggest you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk and on there you'll find links for Kenwood Trust.
Kenwood Trust is kenwoodtrust.org.uk if you want to look at their website. I just happen to know it off the top of my head.
Yes, of course.
As you do with these things.
Yeah.
Poor, conflicting, biased advice costs thousands of pounds in unnecessary and oversized gas boiler heating equipment that also costs more to run. Spend your budget wisely on measures that actually save you cash and carbon. We provide expert and impartial action plans tailored to you. This is the Heating Hub, and I have to say, they looked at my boiler, and by just changing some of the flow control, they saved me over 10% of my gas bill.
Wow.
Really?
Yep.
That's incredible.
Yep. There's a big thing in the gas boiler industry, apparently, where gas boilers are installed that are over-inflated in terms of what you actually need. And you, it's a
so
thing,
they're too big?
It's a thing called flow temperature.
Mm.
So it's not the temperature you set your house at. It's the flow temperature through the boiler. And they're set far too high. And not enough installers know about how...
And it just burns more gas.
When you don't really need it.
Yeah. Heating water you don't need. Mm. So by reducing the flow temperature, you save lots and lots of money.
We need to get old Samson Gas on. He would know. He's a boiler installer
I'm telling you, it's about the Heating Hub who actually do this, right?
Right.
So the Heating Hub will now come and look, you know, for a fixed fee. It's not very much. They'll come and look at your boiler and show you how to reset it to save the money.
Because, you know, I've got three boilers in my house.
Exactly.
Which is terrifying.
And that's not counting you.
Yeah, we didn't
the Heating Hub. Theheatinghub.co.uk. Theheatinghub.co.uk. She is going to keep interrupting me, isn't she?
Heatinghub.co.uk.
Sorry, do they operate across Kent?
Sorry?
To Heating Hub operate right across Kent?
Yeah. They actually operate nationally.
They go into London as well, don't they, and stuff?
They're based in Kent, but they operate nationally, yeah.
I'd like to know who Pimlico Plumbers PR is, because they are always quoted, aren't they, Pimlico Plumbers?
Yeah. Paul and Jules, just when you thought I couldn't be crazier, on the 3rd of July, I and four other nutters from BNI are jumping out of a plane to raise money for Kenwood Trust. Blimey, it's Kenwood Trust Day today, isn't it? Here's a link to sponsor. We'd be super grateful for a mention on the Business Bunker show. That's from Linda Cloak of We Do Social Media. And their campaign is justgiving.com/fightskydive. Good luck with that.
Braver than me.
Yeah. I was driving past Headcorn Airfield over the weekend to go and visit my mum. And it was the Battle of Britain Air Show.
Yeah,
which was brilliant.
So the old Spitfires and...
I was making my mum a cup of tea, three Hurricanes and a Spitfire did a nice little display over our house, which cheered her up no end.
But all she needs now is a few firemen and she's ready to go.
She went, I'm getting all wobbly, call the fire brigade.
I was just going back to the gas thing. Because the kids have left home now, all three of them, there's only me and the new husband scuttling about. So we don't really have baths or showers in the evening unless we've been in the sea. So I literally turn off our hot water every evening. It comes on about 5 and I just do it. And I really need to get it automated, don't I? Because you can get it all done by Hive or... Nest or
Jules, what is the new husband's name?
Oh, it's Gavin Sirkin.
She doesn't know.
It's Gavin Sirkin. Yes, he's a nice Jewish boy, as I said on the Mark Stein show.
She's been working her way through the various religions of the world. She was originally married to a Muslim and lived in Cairo.
Yeah. I was only 18.
And then she married a Christian. And now she's got a Jewish husband.
Yeah.
So when she's fed up with Gavin, she's on to a Buddhist next.
Need a nice Buddhist, I think. But the Jewish religion is great because the food, they're not really into drink. Like, you know, if you go to a Christian wedding or a Catholic wedding, it's, you know, about the booze. The Jews, it's all about the food. So I do very well with eating with them.
Gefilte fish and all that. There's Kent Virtual Networking taking place on Wednesday the 29th of June. That'll be manana, won't it?
Yeah,
tomorrow,
manana.
4 to 5 p.m. Mary Eniulu is hosting this free online event. These Kent events are relaxed networking with like-minded business owners. Everyone is welcome, and it is online. It's a virtual event. Join us for this Kent-based relaxing network. You can find out about it by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, and all the details and a booking link are there.
I noticed there's a new dessert business, and as you know, dessert is my one weakness.
Sunshine Desserts, wasn't that?
It's bubble waffles, sundaes, and milkshakes, and it's preparing to open in Ashford after teaming up with the Town Centre Tea Room. And it's a lady called Ashley Kennett. I think that's a lady's name. Mm-hmm. It's spelt the lady's way.
Yeah, it is.
And she's from Willsborough, and she's joined forces with the owner of the Little Teacup to sell desserts from the cafe in Bank Street from today. Now, this I want to ask Roy something else, which just came to me about food. With your cafe, do you get local people taking in cakes, or is that all health and safety now not allowed? And or do you get businesses donating?
We have a lady who makes the sandwiches.
Lovely.
Who does this professionally, so that we don't make them on site. So we haven't really got the kitchen facilities to do that. Obviously, in our kitchens in the social hub, we have two full-time chefs.
That's for the lunches. Excellent. Sorry, I diverse, but I just wanted to ask Roy, and it popped into my head. The 24-year-old Ashley Kennett has started the business called What a Mess with her sister during lockdown as a way of bringing a new pudding to Ashford that's not currently on the market. She's perfected the recipe by trialling flavours with family and friends before setting up a takeaway from her home. And demand became so high for the bubble waffles, which are made in a special honeycomb mould. Honeycomb is my one weakness.
Is it?
I love a crunchy, I love a honeycomb ice cream, anything like that. Then she contacted businesses in the town centre asking for help finding premises, which led to talks with Russell and Jackie Geen, from the Little Teacup. That's a lovely story.
There you go. Samples here in the studio, really, don't you?
Well, I do a food show called Scoff and Quaff, of which we partake all the time, yes.
I had to stop doing it because I was getting too fat. Yeah.
But
they made me eat stuff.
Yeah, in Romney Marsh, our previous studios, we had a place to cook so that my chefs used to come in and rustle up things. Very difficult to present and eat at the same time.
I imagine it is.
But we managed.
She managed. And she could also put away a couple of bottles of Prosecco while she was doing it.
But
I had
to get a driver to bring me in and out, of course, because I don't drink and drive. So.
And I refuse to. I'm teetotal, so I'd.
Well, many a time I've gone home in the back of his Porsche.
She, take me home.
Yeah. Can't get out, though, that's the thing.
That's too many cakes, Jules, I presume.
Yeah.
No alcohol.
No, involved. Yeah. Maybe a little sherry trifle now.
Aside from the obvious COVID-19 pandemic implications, the construction industry is no stranger to crisis. Whether that be political issues like Brexit or a tragedy such as Grenfell Towers, which ultimately changed the shape and focus of our efforts to drive the industry forwards. With constant growth in technology and evolving business standards, we can't just sit and wait for things to settle. The Kent branch of Constructing Excellence continues to be collaboration focused. Through our wide and varied membership from all sectors of the industry, we are able to share knowledge and experience of the benefit for the many. Our chairperson, Cheryl Corsbrook, hosts our events supported by the rest of our cross-sector committee. Our July event has become our annual open event. It's not for club members only. Please feel free to join us and bring along your construction contacts and colleagues. We will be providing refreshments, including a buffet-style lunch, and welcoming guest speakers as well as hosting panel discussions. As always, our meetings are relaxed, encouraging open conversation and the building of relationships. Excuse me. So if you're in the construction industry and you want to get along to find out everything that's happening, this is taking place at the University of Kent, Canterbury, on Wednesday the 13th of July from 7:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. And to book your tickets, if you go to eventbrite.co.uk, Kent Constructing Excellence, you can book your tickets there.
An online directory for arts and culture in Kent. We've been developing Culture in Kent as a space to bring together creatives and culture lovers in Kent. And this is, I'm just seeing who this is. There's a little website which
it's Natalie Bonnet.
Oh, is it?
It's Madame Natalie.
Oui. So she, her website is cultureinkent.org/register if you want to join up. And she is, she's created it to fill a hole in the cultural life of Kent. The Garden of England is a diverse county, she says. Thriving commuter towns like Tunbridge Wells and Sevenoaks, to the west, historical cities such as Canterbury, and to the east, pretty villages dotted around and all surrounded by trendy and quirky seaside towns, that'll be me, located across its 350 miles of coastline. And so with this diversity, she's got the thriving arts and cultural scene with a host of exhibitions, shows, and performances to be found. And she has brought large venues with marketing budgets together to smaller shows and exhibitions, and she's put them all on this cultureinkent.org website. So brilliant. It's nice to hear from Natalie again.
It is indeed, yeah, and she's doing a fantastic job of organising that. She also does the Faversham 365 art exhibition, which is a brilliant, brilliant event.
And the next meeting of the Marsh Network, very quickly, it's Tuesday the 5th of July. Your website for that is not on here, but go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk. Contact Terry Botfield if you'd like to register on 07749 159 263, or email terry@botfield.net. And it's the 5th of July at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday. Here's the website. It's marshnetwork.co.uk.
Fantastic. The Construction Expo Southeast is taking place on the 22nd of September at the K2 Event Centre in Crawley. It's the place to meet loads of construction professionals from the Southeast London and across the UK. 87% of business directors agree it's easier to communicate face-to-face than by online Zoom or team meetings. To get your free ticket and find out all about the lineup, www.constructionexpouk.co.uk. Jules.
Well, I thought we'd run out of time, actually.
You've got 1 minute.
Have I?
Yeah.
Okay. I've read all mine, sorry.
Now she tells
yeah,
me.
Yeah, well, I'm very conscientious. I mean, I just plough through them.
You're what, conscientious, are you?
Your favourite paella.
Oh, paella is my Valencian paella. I try and avoid the rabbit because I'm a little bit... I do love a bunny.
She's a bunny boiler.
Yeah, I get a little bit sad. When I was pregnant, I couldn't eat rabbit at all, and I just stopped eating rabbit. Because all your hormones are weird when you're pregnant, aren't they?
Yeah.
But paella. I will be having a little paella with my carver. I try and source an organic carver, sulfate, without sulfates, you see. So do join us on the Scoff Quaff show. When I'm back, I'll be doing lots on paella.
Anyway, we've reached the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to our sponsors this week, TELUS IFA, to our fantastic guest, Mr. Darren Morehouse of ARC UK Technologies, Mr. Roy Isworth, Chair of Trustees at the Tenterson Social Hub, and my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin, who's now going to leave me for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week. Bye for now.
Tune in.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel.